Juno Afternoon is made possible with support from Hanson Gress, delivering IT support to local businesses for over 15 years. Before we get going, a quick correction. The temperature in Juno is 36, 33 in Gustavus, and 32 in Hoonah. Our first guest on today's show is here as part of SHI's Native American Heritage Month lecture series. To preview his Tuesday talk at the Walter Soboleff Building titled Herring Egg Distribution in Alaska, Generosity, Reciprocity, and Benefit Flows. Dr. Thomas Thornton, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Scott. It's great to be here.
It is nice to have you. So let's see, among other titles, you are the Vice Provost of Research at UAS and Sponsored Programs.
That's correct.
The Dean of the Arts and Sciences College.
That's right.
And an Associate Professor at Oxford University's Environmental Change Institute.
Yes, that's my affiliation now, not a second job.
Okay. And again, among other things, you've written a book titled The Distribution of Subsistence Herring Eggs from Sitka Sound, Alaska. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. Anything else we should add to your list of titles or accomplishments? I'm sure there are more.
No, only that I've been, I guess you might say, doing research on subsistence and environmental anthropology issues in Southeast Alaska for about 30 years. I first came to the state in 1989 and was working on sockeye salmon fisheries, actually, and issues of subsistence and relationships between communities to particular fisheries. And I would say almost in the first time I encountered Sitka, I learned all about herring and the importance of herring eggs, even though it was summertime, and herring eggs are big in the springtime, because they're just such an important part of that community.
And who or what opened your eyes to that?
Well, I think it was people would mention it and how that was often the first kind of first fruit of the season, if you will, the first eggs of the season. Somebody told me a joke, I think, about how, you know, the Easter Bunny doesn't really lay eggs at Easter time. It's kind of a metaphor. Maybe I shouldn't say that on the radio if children are listening. But herring do lay eggs right around Easter time. And so that's the real bounty and kind of marks when everything comes alive again after a lean winter. And in the old days, lean meant maybe really food security issues. Now it often doesn't mean that, but it's still the coming alive of the marine ecosystem for the year.
And it may be obvious, but who all relies on those eggs?
Well, it turns out a lot of people and other creatures do. Pacific herring in particular, are the most abundant forage fish in the northern hemisphere, at least the Pacific side, and herring in the northern hemisphere altogether.
Forage fish?
Forage fish. And forage fish are called forage fish because other critters forage on them. And so they sit at the kind of foundation of the food chain, converting very little things like zooplankton into fat, oil, meat on their little bodies in great quantity that then gets taken up to what we call higher trophic levels in the food chain. So everything from small fish to salmon to cod to halibut to sea mammals like seal and seabirds, and of course humans. And so a lot of those species are things that at least Alaska Native people have depended on for a long time. So they always recognize herring as foundational, as well as being a kind of cultural keystone species, which just means it has a lot of cultural meaning and importance, both in terms of how it's gathered and how it's processed and distributed.
And is that what your talk is going to focus on tomorrow?
It is going to focus on that, but particularly on distribution. When I first worked for the Division of Subsistence, we were very interested in the production, but also gathered data on how much of what we call subsistence resources is given away, because that's a big part of subsistence, is that you gain enough or you gather enough for your own household, but then you also give it away. And, you know, giving away and how you give away is very much a cultural process. And what's happened with herring is they become relatively concentrated as opposed to their historical situation. If you read accounts of herring, say at the end of the 19th or the beginning of the 20th century, people talk about seeing miles and miles of silver, you know, stirring in the water. People talk about herring coming to the surface at night and it sounding like rain or a windstorm, and just going, taking their fishing boats, you know, from the Alaska Peninsula all the way down to Puget Sound through Southeast Alaska and just having miles and miles of herring. And now you don't see that anymore. And in fact, the places where herring spawn are now pretty much reduced to just a couple of areas. And the biggest concentration is in Sitka Sound. And so that's always been important, but now it's even more important because the distribution that comes from the harvest of herring eggs in Sitka Sound goes to communities all over the region and all over the state. And so this study was about trying to document just how extensive that distribution is and why it's so important, what it means to people.
Do you have a short story or an individual that might exemplify how this is distributed?
Yeah, I think there are lots of individuals, but you know, if I were to draw sort of a typical portrait, there are families or small groups or even individuals that will go out every year in late March and early April. They'll start scouting for herring. They'll see signs in the weather, in the plant growth and so on, and decide to begin to look at places where herring normally gather, and they'll begin to watch the behavior of herring. And then when they begin to spawn, the tradition is to put hemlock branches, western hemlock, in the water in the intertidal area and suspend them, basically weight them down with rocks but let them float in the intertidal area where herring spawn. So literally they're creating habitat for herring to spawn upon. And then you go back and you check those periodically, and then when the spawn is laid, it adheres to the substrate, the hemlock, and then you can pull that out. So it's really a form of cultivation. You know, it's not really just gathering. You are actually cultivating the whole process. And there was a fair amount of protocol and ritual to it, in some places more than others. But it was always done, I would say, in a respectful manner and in such a way that you recognize the agency of the herring. In other words, you have to make your set of hemlock attractive to the herring. You want to put it in a place where they would consider spawning. You want to make it attractive in terms of it's in the right part of the water column and in the right depth and so on, so that herring will spawn there. And that's an art and a science. You know, it's one of those pieces of what we call traditional knowledge or a knowledge belief practice complex that is transmitted from generation to generation, and it's done in customary and traditional ways in customary and traditional places of harvest. And Sitka Sound is the preeminent one in the state for herring eggs.
After the harvest, what surprised you most about the distribution? Was it maybe somewhere far away that it's going to, or how it was distributed?
Well, I think the extensity is amazing. But also how much is given away or traded or bartered, exchanged in some way. So here's a figure for you. 87% on average, at least since we've been collecting data, of the subsistence herring egg harvest from Sitka Sound is distributed. It's given beyond the household. About half of that might stay in the community. You know, it might go to families who can't harvest, elders, people who might be shut in or whatever. But the rest of it goes out. And so in this study, we documented 41 communities over a recent period that have received herring eggs from egg harvesters in Sitka. And most of those communities are in Alaska, but they also go to Canada. A lot of them go to Washington State, where Alaska Natives with ties to these communities have moved. And some of them are as far away as San Francisco, Washington, D.C., even the Philippines.
Wow.
As that might be the record.
If you're
so it's very extensive.
Yeah. If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Dr. Thomas Thornton. He'll be speaking tomorrow at noon as part of SHI's Native American Heritage Month lecture series. It is at noon. It's at the Walter Soboleff Building. It is free. The title of the talk will be Herring Egg Distribution in Alaska, Generosity, Reciprocity, and Benefit Flows. Besides expanding upon some of these ideas, what else can people expect tomorrow?
Well, I think a lot of people are maybe knowledgeable about controversies surrounding herring eggs. And so, for example, there is an active filing against the state by the Sitka Tribe of Alaska to try to prevent them from enforcing the management paradigm that they're currently enforcing to execute the commercial sacro fishery. So that's one thing that people are conscious of. And the reason why they're taking this action is because they feel like their subsistence harvest is imperiled. It's in jeopardy because the size of the spawning area is decreasing. The duration of spawning has gone from about a month in the old days down to about, some cases, 3 days or even less, typically a week at most in recent years. And the size and quality of the spawn has also declined. So the size of the spawners, rather, the mature spawners has declined. So people are quite concerned about that. And then I think the other thing that's very important is that I think a lot of people don't think that the subsistence harvest, which is just a magnificent distribution, as I've just described, is really not valued. Most of it is unrecognized by the state as part of the economy, the singular economy. We measure X vessel value of sacro harvest as it's shipped to Japan. We might measure jobs in the commercial fishing industry. But the distribution of herring eggs probably touches several orders of magnitude more people, at least within Alaska, than the commercial enterprise. And that's significant. And we should recognize that because we hold up subsistence as something we want to protect, but there are large aspects of it, including these distribution networks and the meanings of these relationships that we don't value typically because we don't put a price on them. And of course, you can't put a price on them, but you can say, wow, this is a really valuable institution. It involves a lot of people, a lot of generosity, and a lot of benefits, social benefits and co-benefits that go with this harvest.
Okay. Mm. That's the voice of Dr. Thomas Thornton. Meet him tomorrow at the Walter Soboleff Building at noon for a free talk or lecture on herring egg distribution in Alaska, generosity, reciprocity, and benefit flows. Dr. Thornton, nice having you on the show today.
Thank you very much.
Anything I'm missing, anything you'd like to add?
No, I hope folks come out. It's been a great series. I don't want to build myself up, but I've attended almost all of them, and they've been excellent. A lot of them have turned on some of the important legal issues in the development of Alaska Natives since the turn of the 20th century. So this one's a little different, but I think folks will enjoy it.
All right. Thank you.
It's always more fun to share with everyone. It's always more fun to share with everyone. If you have to give one to your friend, to your friend and me. It's always more fun to share with everyone. It's always more fun to share.